Coming up on Chasing the Natty, this week was absolutely nuts with the amount of spring games that we were treated to, and we're going to discuss 10 of them from the Power 4. We'll dive into each of them to tell you what we think the responsible takeaways are from each of them. We've got all that and more coming right after this.
Look at Ginty go! Breaks a tackle! He's 10! He's touchdown!
Gonna run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milrow, goodbye, touchdown Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus to Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of our podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we are doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there to any of our illustrious tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. If you play it, we've got content, tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty, and the handsome, handsome fellow across from me is Mr. Chris K. He is at Realist Chris K on Twitter. Chris, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, good. The weather's heating up here, which is nice. I was sweating on a walk. I came in and was like, I forgot how much I hate 80 degrees, which is scary considering the fact that it'll be 90 here shortly, but all good things. Can't complain. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm a little burnt from my excursion to Tuscaloosa yesterday. I got eyes on the Alabama Crimson Tide yesterday. For those of you who don't know, my sister goes to University of Alabama, so it was an excuse to visit her, and we both went to the game together. It was awesome. And then kind of off the fly, we decided to go to the UFL game that was in Birmingham on the way back. So, you know, it was driving through Birmingham anyway. I was like, hey, you want to go to another football game? And that we did. So I'm now officially a Birmingham Stallions fan. Nice. So I had a great day yesterday. It was fun catching up on all the spring games afterwards. Again, I had a 3.5-hour drive, so I had plenty of time to listen to the spring games. Again, didn't really get to watch a ton because, you know, I'm not going to watch football as I'm driving. But, you know, it was a good way to kind of listen to the announcers and stuff like that during it. So yeah, all in all, great day. Again, a little sunburned, but other than that, like I'm ready to start talking about some of these spring games.
Yeah, that's it. By the way, that's speaking of responsible, that's a responsible way to watch the spring games, which is Listen while you're driving. So good for you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, as much as I would love to watch, again, it is pretty much a straight shot from Birmingham to Atlanta, but like, you know, gotta be responsible.
Not happening.
Responsible, I guess, will be a theme of today's show though, Kay, because I think it's the first time I've had you on for a spring game show, but you are historically and legendarily known for your pessimism when it comes to takeaways from spring games. You typically think people overreact to them in the past and everything. Why don't you, I guess I'll let you speak for yourself here. How do you typically view these spring games?
Yeah, I'm certainly pessimistic in life a lot of times, especially with spring games. I think my past concerns are just, you know, we know what a lot of the teams have already, and these new guys come in and now we're trying to get cute about who's relevant, who's not. And same with like freshmen. And I think I need to evolve. I don't think my past performances in best balls is allowing me to not adapt. So I'm looking at this a little bit differently, a little bit more optimistically, but I also think it's fair to think about it differently now because all these games that we're about to talk about and all these teams have so many different things going on that are different. Like you can't watch a spring game and not have three or four key things that are different from years past. Right. So LSU receiver situation has been a hot topic for all of us the last couple months. And like, you'd be crazy not to have takeaways from the spring game because there's so many new pieces to it. Everybody's in the same boat, so you have to work off of what you have. And so I think there are times where you can get a little bit too cute, but I think this year more than ever, it's way more valuable to discuss and dig into spring games deeper.
See, I think probably the big thing that, and I think you're correct on some levels, that sometimes we go overboard with these spring games, right? I think Ajay Hall a couple years ago, where everybody was saying like, oh, the Alabama receiver room's weak. Ajay Hall comes in and has this amazing spring game for Alabama. He's going to be the next guy up. He's not even on the team, really, by the time the fall comes. No, he actually did survive the freshman year, but then after that, things fell apart very quickly. But he ended up doing nothing. Michael Trigg. Very famously for me, right? I was big on him going to Ole Miss. He had some buzz in the spring, and then he goes into the spring game, scores 3 touchdowns. And I'm like, well, here we go. But then he bumped up all the way to tight end 3 on the year, was being drafted in like the 5th, 6th round while Michael Meyer and Brock Bowers are going in like the 1st, 2nd round range. And it just got out of hand so quickly. I think kind of the main thing that I've learned over the years is you can never take the spring game really by itself. At least there's stat lines by themselves. It's very easy to look at a stat line and be like, whoa, look at this guy. He did well. Context matters so much. It's just as it always does in CFF, right? When we look at these teams, is the first team offense going up against a second team defense? Which, by the way, if you are a head coach in college football and that is the way you conduct your spring game, you are soft as hell. But again, if that is the case, that does matter. Again, that's going to be the case when we talk about Arkansas later. I do think that is something you have to consider when it comes to how well some of these guys perform. In addition to that, which quarterback are they catching the balls from? Is it somebody who they typically run with the first team, or has the second team quarterback moved up to the first team for a drive or two, and then all of a sudden they were getting love then? All that kind of stuff matters, and I think that's where you come in handy really well here, Kay, is you are good at kind of, because you are a bit more pessimistic about some of the news that comes out of these spring games, you are naturally inclined to look for and ask the questions of why did this happen and is it repeatable for the fall? So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think there's one thing I was doing when I was looking at the notes and the show sheet was trying to like put down notes for teams that people haven't been talking about a lot. Yes. I think obviously LSU receiver we have to talk about consistently throughout the offseason, but some of the teams and situation gets a little overboard because we have a lot of great podcasts out there now, like Josh at All Access. Them with having a podcast now and some of these other guys, it's you kind of have to mix it up, make it a little bit interesting for the different viewers. So yeah, I think this will be a good group of teams to talk to. And I told you, I was going to say, I was like, Jared, dude, you're getting notes for like so many teams. I was like, I have a hard stop at a time here. And it's not even like an hour. I'm like, I need an hour and 45. That's all I got. So I had to pull you back a little bit, but this will be fun.
Let me be very clear. I was never planning on talking about that many teams. It was more about me just trying to write down as many notes as possible so that then I can be like, all right, which are 10, like 10-ish teams that we can talk about today that would be the most interesting? Because I feel like I couldn't really decide on which ones that would be if I didn't already have all the information in front of me. So yeah, sorry to scare you and make you think we were here for a 3-hour podcast. I guess that is a good segue to talk about, like, what teams are we talking about here today? Because, really, those of you who don't know, there were, like, 30 spring games this past week, if not more than that. So, as Kay kind of mentioned, it's impossible for us to talk about them in a hour and a half podcast, all of them. So, what's going to happen here is today we're going to focus on the Power 4 teams. We got 10, or 9 or 10, I can't remember if it was 9 or 10, that we're going to kind of dive in a little bit deeper, and then at the end, when we have a little bit of time, we'll touch on some of the smaller ones with maybe a little bit less takeaways for CFF purposes. And then, surprise, you guys are going to get 2 CTN episodes this week. I got Colin Decker coming on tomorrow. We will have that podcast released to you guys either Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever we get around to that. I think probably Wednesday will be the most likely day that we have that out, but we'll dive into a lot of the G5 teams during that one. And yeah, so Kay and I will talk about the Power 5 teams. I guess, Kay, do we want to go ahead and jump right into this?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's bring it on over to here. Quick announcement, though, before we get into it. If you are listening to this Monday morning, it is if you check your calendar, April 15th. If you guys know anything about what we do here, the 15th of each month is a special day. That means that we have a new Defending the Natty episode out with myself and Nate Marquise. It'll be episode 4. We'll be talking about the 2024 freshmen. Basically, we have our content planned out for the next couple of months. This month, we focused on the freshmen. We're talking about some instant impact guys, some sashes, some fades. Quick note, we did record it before a lot of these spring games, so a lot of you will probably ask about guys like Mikey Matthews, ask about guys like maybe Samaj Jones at Cincinnati. Again, we didn't have all that information before we recorded that episode, but there's still a lot of great information for you guys. I think it's almost a two-hour podcast, so plenty for you guys to listen to if you're looking for some information on the 2024 freshmen. With that being said, that's only the only real announcement I have for today, so let's hit on the first team we'll talk about here, and that'll be the team that I had the pleasure of seeing in person yesterday, the Alabama Crimson Tide. I guess a lot of people really want to know, like, again, does Jalen Milroe fit into this offense? What is the offense looking like? And I am pleased to say that, at least to start, this offense looked incredible. How this game worked was they rotated different tiers of teams through each drive. So, like, your first drive, you had first team offense versus second team defense, first team offense versus first team defense. Second drive, second team offense, second team defense, so on and so forth. And then pretty much every four drives, you are getting back to the starters. And after five drives, the score was 31-0 on the defense. The offense on all levels was just absolutely carving up the defense over and over and over again. And in the process, Milroe looked great. Jeremy Bernard looked absolutely fantastic. Both Justice Haynes and Jam Miller were out there for the first snap of the game. It does not really seem like there's much of a tier break between those two guys. Those two will be the main two backs for Alabama this year. They got rotated all day long. Jam Miller had a great day, though. He had 8 carries, the most on the day by almost any running back. Actually, yes, outside of all the running backs. He had 8 attempts for 83 yards and 2 touchdowns. Just an absolutely phenomenal day. It's just something to keep in mind because, again, with ADP, we have Justice Haynes coming off around the 9th, 8th, 9th, 10th round in a lot of drafts, and Jam Miller is almost available typically as late as the 25th to 30th round, and I really don't think there's going to be that much of a difference between these two. I think if you're drafting Haynes in the range that he's going right now, you're drafting him thinking that he takes over as a bell cow role, and Miller, I think, one, if there is going to be a bell cow, I think he has just as much of a chance of getting that bell cow role. I think the more likely option is both of these guys will be productive. The running game for Alabama is by far the most impressive thing I saw yesterday, although there was quite a few flashes in the receiving game as well. Don't get me wrong. I do think that they're going to rely on this run game quite a bit. I mean, Miller and Haynes are just too good. So that's kind of my takeaways from it. Again, Milroe looked nice. I did talk to somebody who did, like, while I was there, who does have some, or who is privy to the practices, who does get to be out there with some of the practices, and he basically confirmed what a lot of the beat reporters have been saying, and that is that Jalen Milroe does look incredibly improved. His throwing motion is completely changed. DeBoer has worked with him extensively to improve his passing game. And the person I talked to said he would be absolutely shocked if Milroe at any point loses this job during this season. And again, unfortunately for us C2C players and CFF Dynasty players, Austin Mack, who a lot of people are kind of theorizing might come in and take the job, he was QB4 and he was easily the 4th best QB on the day. So definitely got to adjust our expectations for Mack moving forward there. That's enough of my spiel. Okay. Did you get a chance to look at this game, and what were your kind of main takeaways?
I didn't watch much of it, but I did pay attention to, like, a lot of quotes and just kind of like how much they spoke with Milroe. I mean, this is like the case in point of, like, previous thoughts of how, like, why are we getting all cute about Austin Mack? Like, shockingly, Jalen Milroe, the quarterback that led Alabama, that had kind of a down year to the Rose Bowl and was one play away from tying it up and forcing a second overtime. Shockingly, when paired with one of the best offensive minds in football, he looked good and he continues to improve. You know, I'm just the most surprised person here. I will say, you know, we both kind of are on the same boat. We both, I don't know where you had him, Jared, but I had him at like QB 12, QB 13. You know, this basically just confirmed my priors. And so I've moved him up to QB 5. I think that whole bunch, like we've talked about in the past, is just really tight and there's a lot of really good options. But I can't imagine Milrow not having a great year. Like he's the guy he's one of the two guys I would take after that top trio, obviously. So love to hear that. Love how he was talking about Jeremy Bernard, and I think there was a lot of leadership conversation and big play conversation. I think technically didn't he have like 3 catches for 100+?
Yes.
Yeah. So encouraging.
3 for 122.
So super encouraging to see a connection already. This is one of the situations where I think you do have to take the spring practice stuff like pretty importantly, right? New coaching staff,
yep.
New number one running back, new top receivers. So I like Jeremy Bernard already did. Kobe Prentice, I'm a little cooling on, but not for any negative reason, just more that I think Jeremy's definitely starting to be the guy. The running back situation is really interesting, though. I don't think that Jam Miller is necessarily the answer. I think the answer is that he's just undervalued and Justice Haynes is overvalued, right? Like you probably kind of alluded to. So I haven't had much of them, period, but I will start to draft. I'm going to be way more inclined to draft Jam Miller in the 20s if he's there than I would be to draft Haynes, even if he drops a couple rounds. So encouraging to see that the offense looked good. Not too surprising, honestly, but always like the reassurance of Milrow looking good and, you know, him talking up a couple guys makes it really interesting coming out of the game.
Yeah, some people will talk about the fact that Milrow went 3 for 9 on the day. Guys, he had 3 beautiful passes to start this game. And then by the time Milrow got back into the action in the third drive that he had, it was the offense got completely reined in. Like after about, I guess it was the halftime, they didn't really keep time in this game. It was kind of weird, at least not from my point of view. Like in the stadium, there was no time limit, like counting down out there. So like it was hard to tell like when the halftime was and everything. But basically, I read somewhere that around the halfway point, DeBoer said that like, oh, the offense looked so good the first 5 drives because the defense was playing vanilla. And then they stepped up. I'm like, no, I think that's some poppycock. I think your defense got absolutely exposed and you needed the offense to be simplified a little bit to make your defense a little bit better, or at least to get them back on track. Again, it seemed like they started off wrong and you kind of brought it back for them to benefit for them. But
one quick Milrow thought, yep. He has to be one of the top dynasty options. Like if you're doing a dynasty startup right now, there is a world that he blows up and gets goes pro. I certainly think there's a possibility, but I think there's an even better likelihood that he plays really great. He is a top 6-7 quarterback and he stays another year. And we've talked about year twos and offenses and the potential to blow up even more after that point. So I would, at least in the C2C world, maybe that he feels like a really great option because you're going to get at least one incredible college season. And he has kind of that frame athleticism that NFL is starting to warm up to, right? Like the mm-hmm. Daniels, the Richardsons of the world. And he's got a great deep ball. Everybody loves a good deep ball, good arm strength. So I don't know. That was just a quick thought. I'm not a C2C guy, but that feels like a really good option.
I have him as my QB 10 in a CFF dynasty startup. And again, it's for, main reason why he's not any higher is because it's hard to pass up guys like Tommy C, Noah Fifita, Jalen Raynor. Guys are going to be starters for at least 3 more years. Milrow's only got 2 years of eligibility left. That pretty much knocks him down just a little bit there. But among the options where you only get 2 years, he's easily the best, for sure. You said you moved him up to QB 4 or QB 5. I moved him up to QB 4. I had him as QB 7 earlier. It just got to the point where, like, after I got the confirmation from the guy who's been to the practices, watching the spring game, I'm like, okay, it's time to stop being silly. Like, I like Garrett Green. I like Jackson Dart. But if I'm being real, which quarterback right now would I really be the most excited to draft in a league right now? It would be Jalen Milrow. And I just drafted him in the 4th round recently. He's been going around the 5th, 6th round. I'd honestly be okay as high as the 4th round. I'm not ready to quite put him in the 1st round category like, you know, Dylan Gabriel and all of them, because again, there is a change of system there for sure. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to shift upwards.
Yep.
All right. So that's Alabama. We're going to really run through a whole gauntlet of SEC teams here because they pretty much all had their spring games this past weekend. But we'll move over to Arkansas here. And Kay, you advocated so hard for us to talk about Arkansas today. You had some thoughts here. So I'm going to throw it over to you first, man. What did you take away from the Razorbacks?
The two new guys seem very interesting, right? Like Taylen Green was a guy that we all really liked last year, and then he kind of got overtaken oddly by that Boise decision. But I mean, he fits the mold of everything you could possibly want, right? He's a dual threat quarterback. He's been competent passing ball. He looked good in the game. I know you have a note, right? One's a one against twos, which is completely fair, but good to see some positive there. And then Jaquindon Jackson, a guy that's like a former second, third round pick last year, looked really good. Two touchdowns rushing, one touchdown receiving, which I didn't see the play, but I'm curious to see how that looked because, you know, Jaquindon is like a big dude that doesn't seem like the receiving type. So if you can add a little bit of that to the game, the caution that I have, and I have to reel it back in potentially, but I have bumped up Jackson in my RB rankings, is if you look at like the last 2 to 4 years of Arkansas running back usage, even with, I mean, obviously Rocket Sanders, it's always kind of been around 35% rushing usage. Mm-hmm. The benefit here would be that Jackson is a big dude that can score touchdowns, obviously. So there's, you know, hey, maybe we only get 180 carries or 170 carries, but he gets 10 or 12 touchdowns, you know? So I'm really intrigued by Jackson. I have a lot of them already just because of where he's been picked. And I think I would be more inclined to take him higher. What's kind of your takeaway on Jaquindon?
So my takeaway for this running back room is that it's going to be a pretty clear 1A, 1B situation between him and Rashad DeBinion. Both of them had plenty of carries yesterday. I do think that if I'm going after one, it'll probably be Jackson. He looked great yesterday, as he kind of alluded to. 9 carries, 65 yards, 2 touchdowns, another touchdown reception through the air. Again, touchdowns are luck for the most part. But like you said, if he is clearly that guy that'll get those goal line carries, that's something you love to see right there. I don't have him ranked right now, and I definitely should. I thought I had him ranked, but I was confusing him with Rocket Sanders, who I do have ranked. I'll definitely be putting him into my rankings at some point. I was just, again, Bobby Petrino and Sam Pittman are going to run the ball enough to where it is possible that we could have two CFF-relevant running backs with them, especially if they are worried about relying on Taylen Green's passing. Now, in this game, Taylen Green did perform very well, 15 of 21 for 242 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, not shabby whatsoever. Probably the best performance we've ever seen with Taylen Green. But as you alluded to at the very start, this was the first team offense for the second team defense. And I think Green probably benefited from that more than anybody else in this room here. And so if he struggles in the past, I can absolutely see them moving towards a place where they rely on Jackson and DeBinion extensively. And also, again, they got Braylon Russell, the true freshman running back, coming in. He's pretty much the reason why Isaiah Augustave has already announced that he is entering the transfer portal. By the way, quick program note, we are not discussing the transfers. So again, guys like Damian Martinez, guys like Isaiah Augustave, we will touch on that next week because we're going to wait until the spring portal has completely fully opened and we will have all of that for you guys next week. But Jackson, again, I'll move him up my rankings. I don't know exactly how far. Again, I could see him. I could see him finishing around like the RB 40, 50-ish range, where like I'm comfortable drafting him, but like I'm not gonna go super crazy with it.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is I could see. I know what I just said about like past usage. Petrino is super interesting, and you can never trust him, right? I think there's a world where he gets more carries than we think. You know, he could get 18 to 20 a game. I mean, DeBinion is a guy that's been around forever, but he's never really performed well. He has 4.1 and 3.2 yards per carry last two seasons. There's the possibility that they say Jackson's a big guy that can carry the load. We brought him in here for a reason. Dubinion will get some third down work, obviously, and maybe some random series. The Reynolds guy I listed because I thought it was Russell. Super interesting. Russell, did you see the touchdown run that he had?
Oh, it was crazy. It was absolutely nuts.
It looked good. He moved well, and he's apparently 6'1", 252.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He did not look 252. Like, I thought his frame looked pretty good. That's why I was like, man, I'm curious. You could see a world where he's one of the 1A, 1B next season, potentially, right? Like, yeah. So some of the freshmen that I've listed on the notes and are just more like just guys that might take flyers on. And like this Nate league that we're in that's super deep with a huge bench. And I have a ton of picks. Like, why wouldn't I throw a dart maybe at Russell or this Kentucky guy we'll talk about here in a little bit? Like, so I thought that was interesting, just the size type of thing. So we'll see.
Okay, I promise you the Kentucky guy we're going to talk about will not be a dart throw in CFF Dynasty Leagues. He will probably be somebody that goes off in the first two rounds.
I'm worried. I'm more worried these days that this guy seems cool and then it just chip train him transfers in. You know, like he, you think it's the next guy up and then somebody transfers in. But there's only so much you can do. You can't really predict anything. So you just try your best to just draft talent, I guess. But yeah.
No, for sure. Which is, yeah. All right. We'll move on from Arkansas to Florida here. Again, keeping within the SEC here. Probably the two, or I guess there's three names really here that are worth talking about. Two kind of dynasty talks here, with one being DJ Lagway. We know for a fact he won't start this year unless Graham Mertz gets hurt. He does look like he's pretty ready to be the clear backup in Florida. Billy Napier's job basically relies on the success of DJ Lagway moving forward. He's basically the one bargaining chip he has left with the Florida athletic department, saying like, hey, if you fire me, DJ probably goes. But again, Lagway looked good, scored the first touchdown on the day with a really, really nice throw over the middle, threaded between like three different defenders. The other two names are one, Eugene Wilson. He's been drafted quite high, round fourth, fifth round. And we're pretty much starting to get that confirmation that he will be the guy for Florida. There were some rumblings about Shimre Dike, who played with Graham Mertz back at Wisconsin, them having a connection. And I was starting to get a little worried that that might eat into Eugene Wilson. But he goes six catches for 128 yards and a touchdown on the day. You got Billy Napier interviewing afterwards saying, quote, we're going to get our money's worth out of Trey. It sounds like he will be absolutely the focal point of this receiving game going forward, and I don't think anybody's going to be really worried about drafting him moving forward. The last probably interesting name to come out of this, with Trevor Etienne going off to Georgia, this Florida running back room really is in need of that next guy that really steps up. Montrell Johnson's fine. He's been a reliable back for Florida the last couple of years with Billy Napier before that, but he's not really going to be that game breaker. Treyon Webb, I'm not a huge fan of Treyon Webb. I think he's kind of a guy that has been a little too inconsistent for me. But this Jadon Bowe guy coming in, true freshman, 77 yards on 12 carries. Now, granted, again, he wasn't working against the first team defense, so take it with a grain of salt, but a lot of people were talking about afterwards how he has had a very impressive spring, been one of the more explosive guys in the run game. So somebody to keep an eye out for if you're looking for somebody that could potentially break out early on. Who knows? Okay, your thoughts on Florida?
Yeah, I think you nailed him, right? This ball guy seems interesting enough. Looked good. The couple of runs that, the highlights and stuff like that looked good. Trey Wilson, Eugene Wilson, the quote from the coach is what stood out for me, right? Like, there's a world. I need to stop saying that. But
we're responsible today.
We're responsible. Mix it up. He could have a really crazy high target share. I wasn't the highest on him going into this weekend. And then now I'm like, all right, well, now I need to reevaluate where I'm at. You know, you love Will Pauling.
Yep.
Is it possible that Wilson could be potentially as good as Will Pauling? Like, they kind of have the same role of like potentially slot heavy usage. My concern with Florida in general is that the schedule is going to be insane, right?
Yeah.
So how many points do they score? That might be the difference between those two. Lagway was interesting because it you know, true freshman early on in his career. I mean, first semester, and he looked at times like he played the part, like he fit the mold of what, so, you know, what you would expect. So it was cool to see that the lights weren't too bright in the, theoretically speaking. So he seems like a really high dynasty pick, and he kind of confirmed it with that. So the hard part will be the schedule, you know, like maybe it's just, we kick the can the year down the road, 'cause it's just so difficult. Not that it's going to change all that much in the future in the SEC, but yeah, Trey Wilson, I think, is the biggest takeaway here.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just to be very clear, I am not, nor I do believe Kay is not advocating for you to go get Jadon Bowe out of your CFF best ball leagues or anything like that. Again, it's just throwing the name out there, letting you guys know to keep an eye on this guy in the future. Throw him on a watch list. I highly encourage you to throw him on a watch list of some kind. And just that way, if you start to hear, again, that steady drumbeat I talk about all the time, maybe then you might take a shot on him here or there. But for right now, he's just out there. He had a good weekend this weekend. We are responsible with our takeaways here today. So, all right. Going to the other side of the cocktail party here, let's go to Georgia, who also had their spring game. As you guys can imagine, myself as a Georgia fan, I paid heavy attention to this game because I want to see how my team is doing this year. By all indications, this was actually the best performance that the defense had on the spring. A lot of people were saying some things regarding their concern for the Georgia offense and how, again, both the first team and second team were only able to put up 20 points throughout the spring game, given the word we've gotten out of the camps has been that this offense is nigh unstoppable. Definitely did not look unstoppable during the spring game for sure. But again, kudos to the defense there. Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton pretty much got all of the reps at quarterback, which pretty much shows you why Georgia will be grabbing a quarterback out of the portal after the spring is over. It's in terms of healthy scholarship quarterbacks, it is literally just Beck and Stockton right now. Everybody else behind them is either injured, like Ryan Puglisi, or they are walk-ons. So Georgia absolutely will be targeting somebody out of the portal. So hopefully it is not your favorite stash quarterback that you're drafting at the end of CFF best balls right now. The other kind of main takeaway I had was the Georgia receivers. Yes, I know. Hold on. Let me just make sure that it's safe. There are no Nate Marquises ready in the bushes to jump on me and slap me for talking about this. But we know that Kirby Smart is going to put the ball in the hands of Carson Beck this year. There's no reason not to. He is the most dynamic passer that Georgia has had. The receiving weapons are probably among the best top to bottom that Georgia's had in at least a decade. You're talking about, again, Dom Lovett. You're talking about bringing in Colby Young, Dylan Bell. It pretty much goes too deep with Arian Smith, Anthony Evans, a bunch of guys that they have there. And watching this weekend, watching this spring game, and really kind of thinking about what Georgia has lost from last year, I think I'm starting to begin to think that was a year too early on Dominic Lovett. Because here's my thinking of it. Now, I'm not saying Dom Lovett's going to be like a slot heavy guy in terms of, like, you know, Will Pauling or Trey Wilson, as we were talking about just now. I'm not projecting like a 120 target season for Dom Lovett. There's no way Georgia's ever going to do that. They spread the ball around too much. But I do think that he can get to a level where he can be CFF relevant somewhat. We talk about all the time, like, all right, who's going to replace Brock Bowers, right? Again, people are looking at Ben Jurosek, who did not participate in this game, came in late to the spring. Talk about Oscar Delp. I do believe that it is going to be Lovett that sees the most benefit. In this spring game, Lovett saw 7 catches for 104 yards and a touchdown. He was clearly Beck's go-to guy when it came to the receiving options now that Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey are out. He is also kind of, again, he plays in the slot. Beck's best ball is over the middle of the field. That is where Lovett is going to be living in. And last year, when Bowers went down, we saw Lovett get a uptick in targets. And now that he's had another offseason to really build that connection with Beck, I do think that, again, there are going to be times where Lovett is going to be a startable option for CFF moving forward. Now, again, don't go crazy with this. Don't go drafting Lovett like higher than like round 20 in like your CFF best ball leagues or anything like that. But I'm just saying, I'm getting back on it. I am a little worried about his touchdown numbers, though, because last year, Lovett only got 3 touchdowns on 63 targets last year. And Georgia's replaced their last red zone monster in Brock Bowers with Colby Young, who showed himself in this game and throughout spring as a red zone monster. So I'm hoping that doesn't take away too much from Lovett. That's enough of my Georgia spiel. Okay, are you ready to slap me back to reality in terms of...
I'm not, you know, I feel like I have to or else I'm going to get scolded by Nate in the DMs. I would never take a... I think I actually did take Colby Young, like a random best ball. I think Colby Young could be interesting as like a final 2-round option. Like that, I think that's where I took him, like 28th round type thing. Love it. Sure. Same type of thing. You hit on a good couple of good points, right? Bowers is gone. Last year when Bowers was hurt, who benefited? It was Lovett. So there's a positive form there. I do think the passing game will be very relevant. I think Beck is certainly capable of throwing for 3,000.
It's he threw just for 4,000 last year.
Right. You know, so he's going to get the yardage. So it's okay. Are they going to concentrate it enough? That's the hard part. But I would say, hey, if you think there's a receiver at Georgia that is going to be valuable, I would probably target the touchdown guy, which is Young, and just yes. hope that he's the one that gets all the targets or like a bunch of targets. Again, you know, maybe Lovett's the guy that you take at the very end of the draft because you drafted a lot of risky receivers at the top, like a Lacy and maybe a Colorado receiver. And you want just a guy that can be kind of that fill in to just kind of provide a consistent number and best balls just in case. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I couldn't go past that. I don't think there's going to be a Georgia tight end that's worth anything this year. So I do think that the receivers will have an uptick compared to the last 2-3 years, of course.
Let me ask you this, Kay, because this is a guy you love talking about USC wide receivers here. Like Zachariah Branch goes off pretty early in best ball drafts, and we haven't seen a Lincoln Riley wide receiver hit 80-plus targets really since the time of Hollywood Brown. He's an improductive passing offense, so it's worth him taking. But Dom Lovett last year was the wide receiver 1 for Georgia with 63 targets. Without Bowers there, I could see him getting upwards of 80 targets this year. And
it's going to come down to touchdowns, yeah. in two ways, right? Will they throw for a bunch of touchdowns? He can't throw for 24 touchdowns.
No,
he can't.
Absolutely. I agree.
That's the reason why I like the USC guys, is because they will throw for 30 to 35 touchdowns. The targets won't necessarily be there, but if you draft a guy in the 24th round that gets 70 targets and 8 or 10 touchdowns, like you could make that work with how that offense works. And they typically have like 15 to 18 yards per catch or something, right? So you just have to try to nail the touchdown guy in terms of the receiver, and he has to throw for 30 plus touchdowns. That's it.
Yep.
It's easy. This game is easy, Jared. Why are you making college fantasy football just so difficult?
I know. I'm getting too cute with this. So, all right, let's move on. Enough Georgia talk. Let's go talk about Kentucky here. Okay, I'll let you take over on this one. Kentucky, what stood out here, man?
I thought, you know, I watched some highlight tapes, which was interesting. It was like just like the football noise, which if you've ever watched a game with just the noise of the crowd on the game, it's kind of weird. I thought Vandegrift looked fine, you know, like competent for sure. He ran a little bit, but it's just so hard to tell, like, you know, how good of a runner in a game situation he would be, considering all the tackling rules, of course, on quarterbacks in the spring. Chip Traynham looked good. I think a couple highlights of him, he looked cool. But this Jason Patterson freshman looks interesting as like a down the road guy. You know, he had a couple, I think he had 2 touchdowns. There was one of them was stopped at like the 2-yard line type. He seems to have a good enough frame, so he's not just like a little guy. And so I thought it was interesting. Vandegrift had a bunch of passes to Dane Key, and Dane Key is one of those guys that's not expensive. And he has been in the past, I'm pretty sure he's been a pretty high touchdown guy. Limited targets, but has scored some touchdowns. So I found that to be interesting. So I think, I know Nate mentioned in a tweet that like he wanted to see if Vandegrift could like be able to create a receiver that's worth having. And I do think that's the case. I think whether that's Berrian Brown or Dane Key, you know, whether one is like a 25th round pick, you know, if it's Dane Key, then that's totally fair. So I came away from it encouraged by the passing attack. I'll need to dig in a little bit to like the schedule and see if like it's just so horrible like the Georgia Tech one is to make it worth it. But I was encouraged as much as you could from a spring game.
I always find this weird irony in CFF where a lot of times if you get a passing limited quarterback, that typically actually leads to high targets for one receiver, right? Part of what made Vandegrift not be able to eventually take over the starting job at Georgia was, again, as we kind of mentioned just a second ago, Georgia requires their quarterbacks basically to spread the ball around. Like with the way the offense works, you're making reads all the time. So if Vandegrift's going over there and he still has that limitation, it makes sense that he'll probably find a guy. And like you said, it looks like in this spring game, it was Dane Key. Maybe it's Barry and Brown by the fall. But he could have a guy that he locks into because that's just where his safety blanket is. So definitely something to keep an eye on there. I agree. The running back situation obviously is very interesting. I had Chip Trayunum ranked pretty highly, especially among transfer running backs in terms of the landing spot was great. I like Trayunum's talent, which makes me all the more excited for this Jason Patterson guy. Like he is being talked about with the beat reporters as on the same level as Chip Trayunum and Kavassier, not Kavassier Smoke, Slimy Shark, Dimi Sumo. Like he's being talked about as on the same level as those guys. And I mentioned this in the Defending the Natty episode that comes out today if you're listening to this. Whenever I hear a young guy is on the same level as veterans, I pretty much already assume in my mind, I'm like, okay, you're basically above them. Like if you're already at the same point, like you have two less years of experience and you're already at the same level, it's very likely by the end of the year you will be ahead of all of them, especially once you get some game reps in there. So I'm very much interested in Jason Patterson. I might try to handcuff him a little bit with Chip Trayunum. I'm definitely going to fade Chip Trayunum a little bit more now, see if we can get him a little bit later. I currently have him as RB30. I can, I'm definitely going to move him down to probably around RB. I could go even lower than that, probably RB50-ish.
Your takeaway was that the backups are capable enough to steal from Chip. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. My takeaway here is that the fact is that like you have a true freshman coming in here and he's being talked about as already on the same level as a guy like Chip who's been around in college football for 5 years. That's either a really not good sign for Chip Trayunum or a really good sign for Jason Patterson. Either way, Chip Trayunum has to move down our rankings.
He's in a weird spot for me. There's a lot of running backs that are interesting around him. Like I have him above like Jaheim White and Travion and Judkins and Sama, Tootin. So like, I don't know how many of those I would drop him below because like split carries and some sketchiness.
Yeah.
I don't know if I take, it is encouraging for sure for Patterson. I don't take it the same way necessarily. To me, they have produced an RB1 that has been incredible for years. My concern, as I kind of earlier mentioned with Patterson, is that I'm saying it right. It's Patterson, right? I keep saying
it. Yeah, it's Patterson.
Yeah, Patterson is that every year they get a transfer running back, mm-hmm. right? At first, it was Ray Davis, and then it was, Chip Trayunum. Like in this transfer portal era, we might have to look at what coaches are like really, you know, all about the portal and adding guys at running back or quarterback, et cetera. Just like we look at offensive coordinators that say, hey, we throw at 30% to the outside receiver. Like, I think there might come a time where we start to try to pinpoint those. It's too early. So it's not a guarantee in this situation here that Patterson screwed, but so, I could see in 2 years that things don't shake out like we think they would.
So I would argue, again, it comes back down to context, right? If a true freshman is your starting running back by the time they finish their first year, right? Why are they the starting running back? Is it because they overtook guys like Chip Trayunum? Is it because he overtook Dimi Sumo? Or was it because Dimi Sumo got injured? Chip Trayunum just wasn't nearly as good as they thought. And they're looking at, all right, like, yeah, he's our starter, but he's not up to where we want him to be. I think that kind of context matters. Like Kentucky before Ray Davis and before Chip Traianum, right, they had Chris Rodriguez, who was a homegrown product for them. Now, again, like you said, it's the transfer portal era. Things are shifting here and everything. But again, if we get to the end of this year, is Patterson the RB1 because he's just that much? He actually is better than the other two, and therefore they can continue to grow him? Or is it because everybody else was so bad, they just had to go with the freshman?
Well, you also have Benny Snell before Chris Rodriguez too, by the way.
Also true.
That's a positive, yeah, right? We have to figure out, I guess, like, where is that line of demarcation of, like, where the portal... Because not every coach went after the portal the same time, right? Everybody kind of approached it differently. So we'll have to figure that out of, like, when we can start to really pinpoint those coaching tendencies. I just have a hard time thinking... What was he, a three-star running back? I just have a hard time thinking that he's going to overtake an old running back that looked great at Ohio State, that looked even better at Arizona State. And this is the SEC. You know, it's not like the same SEC of years past, but like this is a very real conference. So for him to do that as like a three-star would be extremely impressive. This might be a little bit more of the jump in the gun, but it's certainly very encouraging, the quotes and the possible. All it takes is one injury and 100%, right? Patterson could have it and just done deal on Chip. But that's, you know, that we can't obviously predict or put any odds on that. So I think all that to say is if we're both in having a conversation of how impressive Patterson's been, the coach quotes and things like that, I mean, that's certainly, like you said earlier, he's not a dart throw. Like, you're going to have to use actual draft capital, and there's plenty of good reasons as to why in dynasty drafts.
Yep, absolutely. All right, last SEC team here. You kind of alluded to it, so we will get through this one pretty quickly, I think, because we talked about the LSU passing game quite a bit. But again, new information here, and I'll throw it over to UK. What kind of new information are we getting from the LSU Tigers here?
Man, it's... I sometimes I feel like for this situation, it's like, yeah, I feel like I learned so much, and then I feel like I learned nothing, right? So I guess some of the context, and correct me if I get anything jumbled up, Xavion Thomas had a long touchdown.
Yes.
But it was like a broken coverage. I saw a highlight.
Wide open.
I saw the highlight. He like throws his arm up like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, no one's here. And then like 2 seconds later, he gets the ball. But he has reportedly looked good. And then Chris Hilton is being talked about as like a serious burner. He's faster than everybody, which is nice, right? Kyron Lacy had a long touchdown as well. But I had also heard that he looked good, not great. Mm-hmm. This is a fifth-year breakout, so that's why I'm a little cautious. I think the biggest takeaway here is CJ Daniels is not anywhere near as valuable as we are drafting him as. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it would be, and I think I dropped him like 30 or 40 spots in my receiver rankings this morning. He is working with the second team. There's three guys, like I already mentioned, right, that are seriously in contention to be the top receiver at LSU. I don't see how you could draft CJ Daniels in single digits anymore. Nussmeier looked great. I think we're going to see a Nussmeier major boost in ADP.
He'll get a bump.
I don't think it's worth it. He would have to have an insane passing season to warrant a huge boost. One thing I'm going to write up in the next couple of weeks is like a QBs you need to stack, kind of like an NFL. You stack your quarterback.
Yep.
We've never really done that in college. I'm going to put together something for that. He is 100% one of them, because if he becomes as valuable as his ADP, one or likely two are going to be worth where they're currently being picked. So a lot to be said. Curious where you differ and agree on those kind of five players.
So I've been fading CJ Daniels for a while in terms of where his cost has been. Again, people don't hear what I'm not saying. Like, I like CJ Daniels. I understand why people like him. And I directly said when he transferred there, he really does fit if he could live up to that level, what they did with Brian Thomas last year in terms of that deep outside threat, that burner type on the outside. And I was like, you know what? I can buy that he can fit into that role. And it sounds like when he first got there, it sounded really, really good. But as you pointed out, okay, he was basically with the second team all day. with this. And you can't even say, like, oh, that's just what they do with the transfers, because Xavion Thomas, the transfer from Mississippi State, was running with the ones quite a bit here. So it is most certainly at least a little bit stocked down on CJ Daniels to probably get back to the point where, like, I'm more comfortable with drafting him. Because, like you said, if he falls outside the top 10 rounds, I'm more okay with it, because I do like the talent. But I still think my takeaway as well is that Lacy, Kyren Lacy, is probably still the safest option you can take among these guys. I know you're hesitant on Lacy being like a fifth-year breakout kind of guy. Like, that's a path that not a lot of people tend to have. But as Nate pointed out on Twitter the other day, when Brian Kelly was asked about the receiver room, like, who needs to step up, he didn't say anybody else except for Kyren Lacy. He said, like, he was kind of like the key guy that, like, we need for this year. And so
this is the least trustworthy coaching staff in America. You have to take a quote like that and think about it from a big picture. Maybe he wants Lacy to be that guy, and so he's using a quote like that to
boost him,
really motivate him. Maybe he is saying he's good, but he's not where he needs to be yet, and that's a true statement. He never gets there.
True.
So I think you're right. Lacy is probably the safest. You know, we're probably teetering on his, like, drafting him at his absolute floor, and that we might creep up into some risky business. But this, I do think the passing attack will look good. Nuss looked good. The LSU defense is sketchy at times, but I think people were encouraged by LSU's defense.
I have a thought regarding your Nuss take and talking about how his ADP is probably going to get up a little bit too high. So his ADP currently is QB 27. If he jumps up one more round, he still is in that QB 24, 25-ish range. And I think that's still kind of a fair range for him to go in, because when you take, and I've said this before on the pod, but I think it bears repeating here, Nussmeier is a complete zero in the rushing department. We all know this. But if you take Jaden Daniels' season last year and you only count his passing, he still is a top 24 quarterback in CFF. So basically, if Garrett Nussmeier can just replicate that, and I think we all agree that Nussmeier is probably a better passer than Daniels, that, you know, probably that QB 20, 24-ish range, I'm still pretty okay with him going off into that range. It's just, does he get bumped up into that range where suddenly he's going with Avery Johnson, Jackson Arnold, Kyren Drones, Jackson Dart for some reason? Yeah, that's going to get way too crazy way too quickly. But in terms of him still being a guy that you're getting in the, I don't know, 9th, 10th, 11th round rather than the 12th, 13th round, I'm okay with that.
Let's really quick rapid fire, because I have five different guys ahead of him. I'm curious what you think.
Okay.
Who would you rather have between Nuss and Joey Aguilar?
I have Joey Aguilar as my QB 15. Nuss is my QB 21.
What about Miller Moss? You're a big Miller Moss guy.
Yeah, I got him QB 14.
Preston Stone?
Preston Stone, I have QB 22. Nuss Meyers, QB 21.
Okay, so you would take Nuss then, obviously, yes, right?
I would take Nuss.
What about Cameron Ward?
Cameron Ward, I have as my QB 30 versus Nuss is my QB 21. But as we'll talk about here in a second with Miami, I'm probably going to move Cameron Ward up a little bit in my rankings.
I think I would take Nuss only over Aguilar. I think that's the only guy I would take. Maybe Preston Stone. So interesting. I think there's a lot of guys that are, it's just your, you know, what flavor.
As you've talked about before, Kay, like, this is that range of quarterbacks where things get so weird so quickly, and there is a lot of personal preference.
Real jumbled. Jumbled for sure.
Alrighty. Do we want to talk about the LSU running backs real quick? Or yeah, I'll let you take over.
This is if you're drafting, just hold on to your cue and wait for the Damian Martinez news, because there's a thought that maybe he goes to LSU. But Caleb Jackson looked good. I think everybody agrees. Josh Williams, I think they both ran with the ones.
They did.
From what I could gather from watching.
Offense versus defense. So.
So, you know, that's tough, right? Like, you know, Brian Kelly's kind of done this weird thing before where he kind of played the maybe older, less talented guy. I think who's the guy that went, Edwards-Helaire is probably like the biggest example. That's probably maybe a little bit of a reach of a wild situation. Caleb Jackson looks talented. I would have some caution just because this screams like Miami running back. This screams transfer portal. So
I
just
agree.
Try to hold on to your queue as long as you can when it comes up to you if you're drafting.
I would still be okay with Jackson for the most part because, again, he's going late enough in drafts. Like, let me look at his ADP. Excuse me, ADP real quick.
Something like
RB 50.
10th round.
Yeah, you're looking at probably like 15th. Or no, excuse me, 12th, 13th round. Oh, he's jumped up quite a bit. You used to get him a little bit later than that, but I'd still be kind of okay with that because you're still betting on the talent for the most part. Now, if somebody like Damian Martinez comes to town, yeah, you're probably in trouble. All right, let's go leave the SEC finally, and we'll go talk about Ohio State. And in my opinion, my main takeaway here is that it was hard to take anything away from this game, and I really just feel I feel like we have to talk about it because it's Ohio State, one of the bigger programs in the country. But the way that this game is set up is, again, soft in my opinion. Again, obviously, first team offense versus first team defense is great, but Day is like overly cautious with the health of his players. We see it during the season. We're seeing it here in the spring game. They were playing thud tackling in this game, which is basically two-hand touch with a little bit extra push to it. Like, so basically anytime somebody had an opportunity to break a play, break a tackle or anything like that, the play was blown dead. There was not really much that you could really feel like you're getting full game speed on anything. I do think it was important to see what the QB order was here. Will Howard was the first quarterback out. Technically, Lincoln Kindholz was the second quarterback out, but he didn't really play. He didn't continue to play with the second team. Devin Brown was the next quarterback that came out after that. Julian Sang and Aaron Nolan would then get kind of mixed in behind him. And weirdly enough, again, you're talking about a quarterback competition here at Ohio State, right? Where you know that like Will Howard and Devin Brown are probably your top two guys that you're battling out. Tell me why then that Devin Brown only got 7 throws in this game and Will Howard only got 13. Meanwhile, Julian Sain and Lincoln Kindholz, your QB 3 and 4 at best, each got 17 passes. Like, I don't understand what Day thinks he's getting out of this. Like, why not? If you know that, do what Georgia did, right? Where it's like, if you know your top two guys, just give them as much reps as possible between those two guys. Like, the only thing I can think of here, especially in Kindholz's case, again, it's weird to me that he was the second quarterback out there, even though none of the reports have shown that he is the second guy. And he gets tied for the second most number, or the first number, excuse me, and he's tied for the most number of throws on the day. That screams to me that Kindholz was portaling and Day is trying to keep him around as much as possible. And I don't think it's going to work. Regardless, I'm just kind of mad. I feel like I wasted a lot of time watching this game. Again, there are some good highlight plays and stuff like that. Emeka looked good. Jeremiah Smith looked good, although it is important to me to say that he was with the second team. So don't, like, you're starting wide receivers were still Emeka, Tate, and Jaden Ballard. We'll see how that changes in the fall, but for right now, that's the case. I don't know. This game annoyed me when I was watching through it. What do you think,
Jay? You nailed it. I think we took away like almost nothing. It was so baffling with everything. I think Ryan Day is going to mess this up, right? Like Ryan Day.
I think he will.
Just pick a guy that's going to be able to hand the ball off well and throw your occasional pass and just. Your defense is stacked. You have Caleb Downs and some of these other guys are just insane. Your schedule is pretty soft, relatively speaking. Like you should cakewalk into the playoffs. And it'll be funny when they do something stupid, like play Devin Brown and lose 2 or 3 early games or something. Right. And to me, the right decision is just play Will Howard. He's played a bunch of games. Just let him hand it off.
Yeah.
He can make a capable throw to, they're going to mess this up. They're going to screw this up. Their defense is so good, and the outside receivers are good. The running backs are insane. I think the biggest takeaway is the running backs are going to be
Running game in general looks great. Between the two dual-threat quarterbacks you have at the top, between Judkins and Henderson, like you have Chip Kelly, who's one of the best running offensive coordinators really in the country right now. Like you said, I agree, like, I don't say screw the passing game because you still have receivers that you need to keep happy, but like when you don't have a clear best option in that department, just focus on your strength and just pick a guy who's the safest one.
Yeah. The biggest takeaway for me really is that their running game is going to be great. Judkins and Trayvon, even if they are splitting carries, like that's going to be impressive. Judkins looked awesome. I think he might be the only flex guy I would pick. But I feel like that ADP is going to rise. I think everybody's going to see what we saw and be like, yep, those guys look awesome. I don't have any qualms with 14 touches a game because they'll do certainly enough with it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I'm trying to find where's Quinn
It
Shanda
is,
going?
by the way, it is funny that Michigan beats Ohio State on toughness. Ryan Day says we need to get tougher, and they do the whole thud tackling. Come on, dude.
No,
Like
I know. Like
he
it blows me away. I'm like, I get it. You don't want your guys to get injured, but like if your guy like you will get your guys hurt by making sure that they aren't going full speed in practices. Like you're
Yeah. And
like by not having that physicality there. Like they're gonna get hurt because everybody else is used to those kind of hits. Doesn't make any sense to
yeah.
me.
The problem with Day is that, as he was born on third base, it is a little bit difficult to realize how do you get to third base. And so he's still trying to figure that out
No.
before he gets potentially canned for crazy reasons.
We'll see. All right, let's move on. Let's go to the Big 12 here. We'll talk about UCF. Really, I don't think there's really a ton to take away from this game outside of the performance of JJ Jefferson here. So, okay, I'll throw it over to you here, man. What do you take away from KJ's performance here?
Great to see. My biggest takeaway is great to see high yards per attempt. The as a quarterback in UCF, you're gonna be fine because you're gonna run enough. They're gonna score a ton of points, and so you'll get yours. So KJ is gonna be great. No issues there. The nice thing is for the receivers, the yards per attempt was high. Who really did anything? We don't know. Jarrett Baker, the brother of Javon Baker, I believe scored a touchdown, which is interesting because he played like barely last year. So is it just kind of like a pity touchdown? Is it he actually might be like the second or third receiver, something to follow, just interestingly enough, because they're going to use two receivers like all the time. But yeah, I think KJ Jefferson, if you were drafting him as like a top 10 quarterback, like his ADP I'm sure is, then he's certainly worth it. He certainly is a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, he's going as QB8 right now. I have him as QB5, I believe, in my rankings. No, I've been QB7. Honestly, I might move him up. Like I'm not saying that just because I'm like, oh, I'm buying the hype here. I'm saying that because when I'm in drafts, I have drafted KJ Jefferson over Garrett Green and Jackson Dart, who are my QB5 and 6, multiple times, especially in best ball leagues, where because I'm just like, ah, the upside of Jefferson's just so crazy in this
And he's
offense.
extremely safe too,
Oh
right?
yeah.
Doesn't he feel like just a really, really safe plug and play?
I agree. Again, he fits the system super well. And just to name some of the stats here, okay, to talk about his performance here, like he went 12 of 22, which isn't a great completion percentage, obviously, but as you mentioned, Kate, he got 271 yards out of 12 completions. That is some serious downfield passing attack that they were able to get going on here. Threw two interceptions, not great, obviously, but you can clean some of that stuff up. Two touchdowns. If you came up to me any week during the season and said KJ Jefferson just threw for 271 yards and two touchdowns, I would be ecstatic because I know for a fact he's getting some stuff on the ground. Yes, he ran for -7 yards in the spring game, but guys, they're not letting quarterbacks run in these spring games hardly. So I'm not taking anything away from how a quarterback's rushing performance is in a spring game, unless they're going full speed, which UCF was not. Talk about the receivers here real quick. No mention of Kobe Hudson in any of the reports, which I kind of found weird. I have to believe that's because he didn't play. Because again, like he's clearly the number one guy coming back. The other name I was kind of surprised I didn't see mentioned hardly at all was Bre'Dell Richardson. He's a true freshman there, wide receiver. You hear me talk about him more on the Defending the Natty podcast, but the beat reporters and Gus Malzahn have been just absolutely raving about this guy. They're talking about him potentially as a true freshman nailing down one of the starting spots, and there was just nothing about him in this game. So, just a little
If
weird in my opinion.
anybody watched this game live or somehow on TV or something or just whatever, maybe I'm missing it and didn't pay attention to it. I'm very or knows the background of this because there are teams that will, like Virginia Tech, if we get to it, right? Like there are teams that will say, hey, I already know what I have out of these guys. So I'm just kind of play them a little bit and then just get them off the field real quick, right? Like Kansas did that with Jalen Daniels and some of their offense. They were just like, why are we bothering with this? Health is way too important for these four or five guys. And so maybe that's why Hudson didn't do anything. The Richardson stuff is interesting because of all the hype and the buzz. This is the type of game that you would think that you would get something out of it, but
for sure
we didn't.
Yeah, just nothing there. All right, we got one last team that we're going to do a deep dive into, and I think we're going to have some time to hit on some of these other teams here. But let's go from one, I almost said one end of Florida to another, but UCF's right there in the middle. So I guess we'll go from the middle of Florida down to the south end. Let's go to Miami of Florida. And my main takeaways here was the beat writers and everybody involved at Miami were not wrong with how good Cam Ward is looking. He looked great on Saturday, 19 for 24, 324 yards and three touchdowns. The connection between him and Xavier Restrepo that people have been talking about looked phenomenal as well. Restrepo ended the day with seven catches for 103 yards and a touchdown. Just looked great. A lot of targets also went Isaiah Horton's way, which I kind of find interesting because I'm not, this is not knocking Jacoby George here or anything like that, because George also had a nice day, caught a touchdown as well. But like Isaiah Horton was just getting peppered over and over again. And you listen to the broadcast to talk about how he's clearly, like he's the third guy in this Miami passing attack. He is going, Horton's getting undrafted. Meanwhile, Restrepo's, you know, in the third round, Jacoby George going off in the 10th round. Between George and him, like I could absolutely see it to be where like Restrepo's the week to week guy. That's the guy you want. Meanwhile, George and Horton are trading weeks where they are, you know, one's going off, one's not. If you like Jacoby George, why not draft Isaiah Horton at the very end of the draft as well? Especially after JoJo Trader. JoJo Trader's been, he's a true freshman there at wide receiver. He's been going in like the last five rounds of drafts. And I'm just like, I have no indication that he'll be a starter. So
it's an odd one, isn't it?
I know. And again,
who's doing that? I need to know who's doing that because I would have not even thought once about drafting him.
And like, here's the thing. Like, I like JoJo Trader. Like, I've watched the film. He looks great, and I think he will be. Like, especially if we keep the Shane Dawson offense, which, by the way, like is looking great in year two. Like, Trader will be a guy I'll want in a year or two. But for right now, I don't think there's no reason to think that he'll unseat George, Restrepo, or Horton here. Last one here, and I got to give a shout out to Josh Chevalier, who was on this really before anybody else. But Elijah Lofton is a former tight end that is coming to Miami who's now getting carries at running back. Again, kind of tells you the state of which the running back room at Miami's in right now, that you have a, I can't remember if he's a true freshman or a redshirt freshman, tight end getting carries at running back, but that's where we're at. It was him and Chris Johnson, the other true freshman running back coming in this year, working with the first team here. This could be an interesting development. Again, we don't need, if Lofton gets like what, 8 to 9 carries per game, and he looks as good as he did in the spring game this past week, like he'll be probably still a top 10 tight end for CFF. That's all the opportunity he really needs each week, unless you're playing in like a two-point tight end premium league where carries don't count nearly as much as a reception. But even so, just something to kind of file away there when it comes to potential tight end cheat codes there, especially if he does continue to line up in line, which he did on occasion here. So, Kay, your thoughts about Miami? What are your kind of main takeaways?
Yeah, I'll talk about Lofton real quick. Well, to be fair to all of us not named Josh Chevalier, Josh talks about every single Miami player. So you have to really, it's kind of like almost like you in Georgia. You have to really, you dig in a little bit because Josh knows what he's talking about, but sometimes you take this stuff with a grain of salt. I love you, Josh. But yeah, I mean, this screams cheat code. This screams TJ Donaldson freshman year. A couple of things that you have to think about that are important.
Of course.
Cam Ward is hyping him up. Like Cam Ward was interviewed and he was saying Elijah Lofton is going to get playing time. He's going to be a guy that's on the field. Like Ward certainly seems like he's running into this like extreme leadership role, which is really encouraging as well for him, obviously. And then you talk about the Miami coaching staff. The quotes are, "We're just trying to figure out where he's going to be on the field, not necessarily if he's going to be on the field." 6'3" or 6'4" or 230. Like, what is Miami's running back room? Really thin, fairly small players. So, 8 to 10 carries, one or two of them a game at the goal line, one or two receptions, like that stuff adds up. And at a tight end position that is not hard to get into the top 10, you could be getting him for 3 years in. He could be the Tito of the century, right? He could be like Jalen Samuels of years past.
As
So
long as
I
he gets at
really,
least 10% in that inline spot.
yes, right. So I think that's a great, I mean, at this point, you kind of almost have to take him at the very end of drafts if he's available. I'd like to see or maybe hear a little bit more before getting that price getting higher and higher, but I could see that happening.
Well, okay, let me ask
Receiver.
you, how many tight ends in a 30-round best ball do you take?
I take four, probably four, maybe. Yeah, four.
Your fourth tight end is not going to be like the upside of the fourth tight end is not going to be nearly as good as a guy who is potentially going to get carries out of a backfield in a what
Right.
should be a productive offense with the Miami Hurricanes. So
Right. Yeah.
there's
So
no
I agree.
upside, you can't justify it.
Yeah, there's certainly at this point, there's no reason not to take him. Value is whatever, right? But there's no reason for him not to be taken. Looking at receivers, I think you nailed it. Cam Ward, super interesting. If he's gonna pass like that, like I have a hard time. I mean, I've clearly come around a little bit on him. I think last year he was in the 40s for me and a great offense. This offense is worse, and I have him in the mid-20s. So, like, I'm certainly seeing and respecting his talent. The running back situation was interesting besides Lofton. Christian Jr. was running with the ones. But like I mentioned with, like, the LSU running back stuff, it almost just feels like they're going to get somebody in the portal, right?
Oh, they
Like,
have to.
and they have the money, and they want to do the whole Miami's back thing. So we'll see. Not that you should draft Chris Johnson, but if we go through the transfer portal and nothing's happening, we have to. One of those guys, somebody in that running back room is being undervalued. So just something that we should be taking and keeping an eye on.
I definitely agree. All righty, we got one last slide here. There's again, we can try to talk in depth about every single team out there, but there's just too many teams for that to really be doable. We've only covered nine teams so far, and we have, let's see, there's 12 teams on the board here, so or 13 teams on the board here. So that means we had 22 Power Four teams that we thought about talking about here today. So these last 12 here, again, we may not even get to all of them. We're just kind of run out the clock here, really, until we're about roughly an hour and a half. And okay, I guess really just pick a team and just kind of give
Let's,
a quick
yeah.
30 second to a minute. Like, what are your main takeaways from what we had?
Virginia Tech, obviously my school. They kind of drones looked cool, nothing crazy. They really didn't do a whole lot. The first play of the game was a Malachi Thomas pass.
Oh,
So
wow.
it'd be fun to see. I think the offense is going to continue to be a little bit funner than we originally thought when Pry was hired, but not a lot to take away. I will say if you're playing, I'll get to the IDP things. I think Ali Jennings, I was on Daquan Felton, and I do think there's some value in him. I am cooling a little bit. This could be my first pump and dump of 2024.
For
Because
shame,
Ali Jennings
Kay.
was getting some serious looks early, and then they pretty much just didn't, they didn't really do much with like the starters or the top guys since. If you play IDP, I already said this to Justice, so he's got 24 hours on you. There's a guy for Virginia Tech, a guy, I think it's Burgos. He had three sacks in a row, and he also had a tipped interception. So he looked good. That defensive line looks good in general, but yeah, not a lot to take away. They didn't really play the big names much.
I'm going to pick an easy team here, because I thought Ohio State was terrible to have takeaways from. Ole Miss just made it damn right impossible, because their spring game ended up becoming like a field day like you'd have back in elementary school. They had some 7-on-7, but again, that's not real football at that point, and you're looking at them doing things like tug of war. They did a dunk contest. They had a competition where the players challenged Joey Chestnut to hot dog eating competition. And it was, it basically made it to where there's nothing you could possibly take away from the Ole Miss quote unquote spring game. So
I think in a sense, it's kind of a fun way to do it. You know,
like it's a fun way to do it. Yeah.
It's kind of more of an event than it is an actual game. So would you expect anything less out of Lane Kiffin?
Not at all. All right. Okay. Pick another team here.
Utah. So real quickly, everybody was hyped, like talking great about Cam Rising. That's not really a fantasy asset. I think that's a late round pick, sure. But they really talked about two receivers, that one we already know and one we're hopeful over. Brent Keithy, the tight end, apparently looked really good. You know, I think people are scared about the whole injured thing. He was injured a year and a half ago. Like last year was when we got burned. I am very confident in Keithy being a top five receiver. I'm sorry, top five tight end this year. And if Rising is going to be good, then Keithy is going to be great. Like those two love each other. And then the other one is Dorian Singer. Apparently there's a really nice connection there. It's great to see. And from like, from our standpoint, right, he was awesome at Arizona. For whatever reason, it didn't work at USC. He was smart. He went to a situation like Utah where he could play, big school. So I think Singer's a guy that I'll start drafting in the 20th type rounds because I think the connection could be fun.
Let me see. Where is he going in ADP right now? Wide receiver 105, 26th round. Yeah, he's available very, very late. One thing I'll add about Utah is for the dynasty lovers out there, Isaac Wilson is the true freshman quarterback they have there, and they could not stop talking about him after the spring game and how just confident he is running this system already. Cam Rising's done after this year. Brandon Rose is the only other quarterback that Utah has over there, and quite frankly, he didn't really do much last year to solidify as like the guy of the future for the Utes here. I'd honestly be okay with taking Isaac Wilson as a stash.
I saw a ton of hype out of him too, and Kyle Whittingham screams I'm going to be loyal at quarterback. Like I want a guy that's been in the system type. And so Wilson definitely popped in the stuff I was reading as well.
All right. What's another team I could go with here? I'll go Penn State. This is probably a big one that we probably could have dove a little bit deeper on, but I'm just not excited about this offense. Great. I know our Slack blew up earlier in terms of like how to take away from this game. It was an interesting argument between some of the guys saying like this doesn't look like the Kansas offense. The, for those of you who don't know, Penn State's new offensive coordinator was the former offensive coordinator there at Kansas, saying like there's not nearly as much motion. Is Franklin keeping his thumb on the offense once again, and therefore we shouldn't be excited about it? Some people saying like, hey, it's a spring game. They probably were super vanilla. Both sides I think have their merits, but in terms of just actual takeaways from this game, I mean, Aller passed for 202 yards. He still looks like the best quarterback, but how much is that really saying? I do think it was interesting that Harrison Wallace had a team high of 7 targets for 72 yards. Meanwhile, Caden Saunders also got 6 targets in the first half. If they can kind of focus targets to just those two guys, maybe there's a path to CFF relevance for them, but like I'm not going to hold my breath. And then the other part was, in the running game, you had Nicholas Singleton and Ka'Tron Allen sitting out for this game, which left Quentin Martin, the true freshman running back there, pretty much the only other real option they have at quarterback, or excuse me, at running back, and he made the most of it. He scored, I believe, 2 touchdowns. He might have scored 3. I think he had a receiving one in there as well. Yeah, no, never mind, 2 touchdowns. So first touchdown and then a receiving one there. So definitely something to be interested in. Maybe that impacts your view of Nicholas Singleton and Ka'Tron Allen if he's good enough to kind of break into that rotation a bit. Maybe. I'm just super excited about him for next year, because if Ka'Tron Allen and Nicholas Singleton are both gone after this year, oh boy, Martin's wheels up. So that's my takeaway from Penn State.
He got a lot of buzz from everybody, it seemed like, on Twitter and stuff. So on X, whatever. I'll talk Houston. Houston's a big one, right? We got the new coaching staff in there, Fritz. Donovan Smith didn't play. He injured his, I think it's his non-throwing shoulder, right? Maybe it is his throwing shoulder, but he didn't play. Chris didn't look encouraging at all. I watched, this is the first one of the day on Saturday, so I watched, this is the one I probably most of it live. And Parker Jenkins is an interesting option here, right? He popped one game last year. Dana screwed around and he only saw double-digit carries like twice in the rest of the season, right? So, but Fritz is in. Fritz last year had Mekhi Hughes and kind of was very vocal about it at one point, like, and said, like, this is going to be my guy. Like, he is going to be the lead guy. So I think I'm going to start really warming up to Parker Jenkins. I have a little bit of him already, but I think he's going to be a really interesting option because I do think Fritz is going to be the type that will encourage one running back to get the most carries. I know you kind of mentioned Stacy Snead, and certainly he could be a thorn in his side. I think it's just hard to not play the young guy when he seems to be better. Stacy Snead is who he is. He's older, and I am not necessarily as worried about running back by committee, but it could happen. But I will be drafting Jenkins like it's not a committee.
Oh, I think you misread my comment there. Again, like I think Stacy Snead is going to be more of an impact than we initially kind of thought he was. I'll be real. I thought he was gone. I thought that this was basically Parker Jenkins' backfield to himself at this point. But Snead did get the first carry, so clearly there's going to be some level of
respect shown to him, and
thank you.
Certain usage. There will be usage for Snead. 100%.
Jenkins is clearly the better running back out of the two, and I've drafted quite a few Jenkinses. Like, he goes pretty late in drafts right now. Like, in, we're talking about 23rd round, RB 81. I have him RB 50, so I've been drafting him well ahead of where he's been going in a lot of drafts, and I feel very confident with it. I like Jenkins moving forward. Let's go to, I'll bring up Boston College here. Not too much to take away from here. Castellanos had a decent day, 4 touchdowns on the day, 3 through the air, 1 on the ground. His actual production numbers weren't super great. 13 for 29, 127 yards through the air, 30 yards on the ground. So glad he got those touchdowns, because again, the yardage was definitely rough there. There's been some weird talk among the beat reporters about how, like, Grayson James, who's the transfer quarterback from FIU, if anybody remembers Grayson James, I believe he was the quarterback last year that finished a game with 4 passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
But the beat reporters are talking about how great he looked this past weekend and how there's a legitimate competition between him and Castellanos. I'm like, what in the world are each and every one of you smoking? Like, you've seen this guy, like, actually play before, right? It's super weird. I'm not reading anything into that. I am trying to read into a little bit to see if there's any receiving options that might be interesting here. Anything to do with that running back room. It seems like that Kai Robichaud and Jordan McDonald are kind of the two thunderbacks, while Trayshawn Ward's a bit more of a lightning roll. To me, that screams that it's probably going to be a committee of some kind, especially if Bill O'Brien's pass work is anything to go off of there. I brought up the receiving situation, didn't say anything about that. Lewis Bond was out, so it's a little hard to kind of gauge how things go. Jaren Bradley and Jaden McGowan, the true transfer wide receivers, they brought in flash, but nobody really stood out as like a, oh, that's Castellanos' go-to guy.
BC is BC, so Castellanos the guy, and so hopefully he doesn't let some a crew that's not necessarily as up to level as him wear him down a little bit. The only other team I can think of having anything of value is Kansas. I wrote down Isaiah Marshall, a 3-star dual threat quarterback, apparently impressed. Didn't see the game, but I know Kansas last couple of years has been pretty cool with dual threat quarterbacks. So I'm going to take a note of a guy like this that's got a decent frame, right? Like, for me, this is different than like last year when I liked Pop Watson, the Virginia Tech freshman. Mm-hmm. Pop Watson's like 5'11", 190, and he's definitely raw. At least this guy, Marshall, has some real frame to him. So interesting enough where I'm going to put in the back pocket. Jalen Daniels loves to get hurt, unfortunately, because that guy's got some fun talent. Potentially could see some playing time if things get weird, but that's certainly a dynasty pick for sure.
Yeah, I'll do one more here where I kind of go like a bit more explainy, I guess is the word I'm looking for, but like then the rest of them, I'll just kind of read off the bullet points that we had. Like, I'll do Tennessee last year. Mikey Matthews, Chris Brazell, two names to watch at wide receiver there. It's hard to really judge how much of an impact they'll be, given that Squirrel White and Brew McCoy were out here. But I've heard a lot of buzz for Chris Brazell coming into Tennessee. Definitely more buzz than like Dante Thornton was getting last year, even going into this year. So if you're looking for a late option to throw at for Tennessee's offense, like, I wouldn't blame people for drafting Chris Brazell or Brew McCoy. I think Brew McCoy is somebody that people have forgotten about. And okay, that makes you happy. But yeah, like Chris Brazell is going as wide receiver 10 right now. You got Brew McCoy's wide receiver 160. I think both those guys are good stashes. And speaking of stashes, Jake Merlinker is the true freshman quarterback. He looked really good this past weekend at Tennessee. Nico will play this year, probably play next year. But like, given Merlinker's skill set, he's a rusher. He fits into the system really, really well. I wouldn't be shocked if Nico doesn't transfer out after this year to go to like a bigger program or something like that, or Nico does stick around for 2 years. Like, I could see Merlinker transferring and finding a really, really good spot. Like you talked about earlier, Kay, about like just drafting talent now, drafting guys with good skill sets. Merlinker feels like a really good option that'll probably go late in a lot of drafts for dynasty purposes. All right, bullet points on the rest of these. Pittsburgh, Yarnell outplaying Eli Holsting. Again, I don't think anybody's drafting anybody really from Pittsburgh right now. The running backs all look bad. Everybody less than 4 yards per carry. Kenny Johnson might be interesting. 6 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown here. But I don't think anybody wants to trust this offense.
Yeah, it's the typical, you know, big game, but who knows really fully what actually happened. But, you know, you just throw a name down, you take a dart throw every now and then.
Exactly. Georgia Tech, pretty much everything what you'd expect. Like, Haynes King looked good. Rutherford looked good. Singleton looked good. Jamal Haynes all looked good. They're picking right back off where they left last season. I don't think anything's really going to change there. Cincinnati, Xavier Henderson and Corey Kiner were out for the day. Brendan Sorensby played. Tamaj Jones actually was talked about as probably being the quarterback that impressed the most on the day. That's a true freshman quarterback. We're talking a lot about freshmen here today, but like, he looked really good. Cale Woodburn is another name that people might want to kind of file in the back of their name. He's a true freshman who is apparently running with Brendan Sorensby, so clearly he's working his way up that depth chart pretty quickly. So just another name to file away there for the future, but definitely nobody here between Jones and Woodburn am I drafting in CFF drafts right now. And then the last one I'll touch on here is Purdue. Not really much to take away from here. We did get a look at what looks like the first team offense, which is Hudson Card. Your running backs being Devin Mockabee, no surprise there. And then your two starting wide receivers currently are CJ Smith and Jaron Tibbs. And then Jaden Dixon Veal. Those are your three starting wide receivers. Guys like Denylan Morissette and Andrew Zawinski rotated in there. But the interesting note I found in one of the articles, I forgot to write down who said this, so my apologies for not giving due credit here. But they said when it comes to the receiver room, Dixon Veal, Smith, Morissette, and Tibbs all look like they'll be in the mix. However, Jamal Edgerine, who transferred in from FAU last year, tore his ACL prior to the start of last season. He is expected to be a go-to option. Not the go-to option, but a go-to option. So, again, what does that really mean in a Graham Harrell offense? Not really much the last couple of years, but for right now, it's, again, another name to kind of file away. So, okay, among those, any of those teams I ran through, you got any thoughts, or are you ready to get out of here?
I think that was it, man. That's a lot of teams to cover.
A lot of teams to cover. We've technically covered 22 teams today. And you know what the crazy thing is? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 G5 teams that we'll be covering on the next episode of CTN that comes out later this week. So just gives you an idea of how much information is out there. Hopefully you guys took a lot away from this. Oh my goodness, my throat is like drying up on me over here. Kay, save me. What are you working on, man? And what can the people expect?
Well, we got our second best ball draft as a campus to Canton community is finishing up. So I'm going to have probably some takeaways, thoughts on that one. And then the other article about stacking quarterbacks in college football. And then just doing some Burning the Red Shirt podcast. Did one this past week, probably going to. I'm going to Florida this week, so probably not this week, but the next, come back and get another episode out. So we're getting there, mid-April. We're getting there.
We are definitely getting there, and again, a lot of craziness about to start with the transfer portal this next upcoming week. I was talking to my sister and her friends yesterday, and I was telling them, I'm like, I am not looking forward to Monday. I'm not looking forward to see what all goes up in smoke that we've been working on the last couple of months in terms of transfers and everything like that. We'll find out. It'll be like a reverse Christmas, I guess, where it's things get thrown up, but also it keeps things interesting, right? So we'll definitely see over the next couple of weeks. Again, check out Defending the Natty. We talk about freshmen. Next month, we'll talk about some supplemental players. It'll be a ton of fun. And before you guys know it, like after Memorial Day, we'll get those live draft streams back up and running. Those are a ton of fun every year. So a lot of great stuff in the work. But until then, we need to take a break. And we will see you guys back here next week. If you have not already, go ahead and leave a like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network and family for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Like I said, we'll be back here next Monday. Actually, we'll be back here later this week to discuss some of the G5 spring games. And then next week, we'll be back to discuss all of the transfer portal craziness that is bound to happen over the next week. Until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.